Great Plays. The National Broadcasting Company presents Love for Love by William Congreve. As a gentleman author whose scintillating wit made him the toast of London society, Congreve was the contemporary of Addison, Pope, and Steele. The radio version of Love for Love employs certain portions of The Way of the World, both by Congreve, and made into an acting version by Lawrence Langner, and was produced at the Westport Country Playhouse. Congreve retired from dramatic activity at the age of 30, but his brilliant style and wit carve for him a dominant place in the development of drama. Once again, we invite you to be our guest in London at the first performance of Love for Love, April 30th, 1695. Well, here we are at the new theater in Lincoln's Inn Fields. Bows, bells, courtiers, society folk in their velvet, satins, plumes, and wigs are entering the playhouse, rubbing elbows with people from every walk of life. Under Betterton's excellent management, all London predicts a glorious future for both the new theater and the play. Every seat is sold for the premiere of Love for Love. Box seats are $1, the pit or lower floor, 60 cents, the first gallery, 36 cents, and the upper gallery, 25 cents. The music you hear comes from the orchestra in a gaily decorated box above the center of the proscenium arch. The stage in the Restoration Theater extends out into the pit, so that nearly all the dramatic action takes place in front of the proscenium arch, thus affording the greatest intimacy between the actors and the audience. The pit is filled to overflowing. The wits and beaux of the town are standing on the backless benches, which are covered over with green baize. In a section aptly called Pop's Corner near the stage, the young Blades have gathered ready to praise or chide the actors in this afternoon's performance. Magnificently dressed ladies and gallants fill the four boxes, which look down on the front part of the stage. The applause which you hear is a welcome to the courtiers and masked ladies who are entering the king's box in the center of the gallery. It is evident that the audience has come to see and to be seen. It is past 3 o'clock. The roll of the drum is the signal that the play is ready to begin. The stage setting represents a room in Valentine's house. Valentine, the hero of the play, enters. He is in love with Angelica and has fallen under his father's displeasure with his expensive way of living. As a rebuke to his family and friends, Valentine confines himself to his room. Jeremy, his valet, waits upon him.
Oh, slife, Sir Valentine, what do you mean? To mew yourself up here with 3 or 4 musty books in commendation of starving and poverty?
Jeremy, I have no money, and therefore resolve to rail at all that have. And in that, I but follow the examples of the wisest and the wittiest men of all ages.
Yes.
You are a fool.
Oh, I was always a fool when I told you what your expenses would bring you to. You're being in love with a lady that did not care a farthing for you in your prosperity.
Well, and now I am poor, I have an opportunity to be revenged on them all. I'll pursue Angelica with more love than ever, and my poverty will be a mortification to her pride, and perhaps make her compassionate of the love which has principally reduced me to this lowness of fortune. I'll write a play.
Oh, sir, is this the way to recover your father's favor? Why, Sir Samson would be irreconcilable. If your younger brother should come from sea, he'd never look upon you again. Oh, you're undone, sir, you're ruined. You won't have a friend left in the world if you turn playwright.
What is Jeremy holding for?
Ah, scandal. The rogue has been declaiming against wit.
Aye? Why, then, I'm afraid Jeremy has wit.
Oh, Mr. Scandal, for heaven's sake, sir, try if you can dissuade him from turning playwright.
Playwright? He shall turn soldier first and rather depend upon the outside of his head than the lining. Why, what the devil? Has not your poverty made you enemies enough?
Nay, I'm not violently bent on writing plays. Jeremy, see who's there.
Yes, sir.
But tell me, Scandal, what does the world say of me and my forced confinement?
The world behaves itself as it uses to do on such occasions. Some pity you and condemn your father. Others excuse him and blame you. Only the ladies are merciful and wish you well.
Ah.
Since love and pleasurable expense have been your greatest fault.
Sir.
How now?
Oh, nothing new, sir. I've dispatched some half a dozen duns with as much dexterity as a hungry judge does cases at dinner time.
What answer have you given them?
Patience, I suppose. The old receipt.
Oh, no, faith, sir. I was forced to tell them in plain, downright English...
What?
...that they should be paid.
When?
Tomorrow.
And how the devil do you mean to keep your word?
Keep it? Not at all. It's been so very much stretched that I reckon it will break, of course, by tomorrow, and nobody be surprised at the matter.
Oh, again.
Sir, if you don't like my negotiation, will you be pleased to answer these yourself?
See who they are. Go.
Yes, sir.
Go. By this scandal, you may see what it is to be great. Secretaries of state, presidents of council, and generals of an army lead just such a life as I do. Have just such crowds of visitants in the morning, all soliciting of past promises.
Oh, sir,
what?
Sir, there's Buckram, your father's lawyer, come.
Bid Buckram come in.
Yes, sir.
Here is the dog of a lawyer now.
Oh, Mr. Scandal, you are uncivil.
Uncivil, sir?
He comes with a proposal from my father, Scandal. Well, tell me, Buckram, will my father pay all my debts?
If, as you say, they are no more than £4,000, and you will sign this document.
Eh? Well, what does this mean?
As soon as your brother Ben is landed, you agree to execute a document of conveyance of your estate to him.
You need say no more. I understand the conditions. Yeah, they're very hard. But my necessity is very pressing. I agree to them. Jeremy, see Buckram to the door.
Oh, yes, sir.
I'm surprised. What? Does your father relent?
No. You sent me the hardest conditions in the world. You have heard of a booby brother of mine that was sent to sea 3 years ago?
Yes.
Well, this brother my father hears is landed. Thereupon my father, Sir Samson, very affectionately sends me word if I will make a deed of conveyance of my right to his estate after his death to my younger brother, Benjamin. He will immediately furnish me with £4,000 to pay my debts.
I see.
Yes. This was once proposed before, and I refused it. But the present impatience of my creditors for their money and my absence from Angelica forced me to consent.
A very desperate demonstration of your love to Angelica. Valentine... You have very little reason to believe that a woman of this age, who has had an indifference for you and your prosperity, will fall in love with you and your ill fortune. Besides, Angelica has a great fortune of her own, and great fortunes either expect another great fortune or a fool.
Oh, more misfortune.
What now, man?
Mr. Tattle has come to wait upon you.
Pox on him. I'll be gone.
No, pray thee, stay. Tattle and you should never be asunder. You are light and shadow and show one another. He is perfectly the reverse, both in humor and understanding. And as you set up for defamation, he is a mender of reputations.
A mender of reputations? Aye, just as he's a keeper of secrets. For the rogue will speak aloud in the posture of a whisper. In short, he is a public professor of secrecy. He's here.
Valentine, good morning. Scandal, I'm yours. That is, when you speak well of me.
That is, when I'm yours. For while I am my own, that will never happen.
Oh, how inhuman. I thank heaven it has always been part of my character to handle the reputations of others very tenderly, indeed.
Aye, such rotten reputations as you have to deal with are to be handled tenderly, indeed. What think you of that noble commoner, Mrs. Drabb?
Pooh, I know that Madam Drabb has made her brags in three or four places, said that I said this and that and little her and did, oh, I know not what. But upon my reputation, she did me wrong. Well, well, that was malice. But I know the bottom of it. She was bribed to that by one we all know. A man, too. Only to bring me into disgrace with a certain woman of quality.
Whom we all know.
But I soon satisfied the lady of my innocence. For I told her, Madam, says I, if your grace...
Your grace? Then it was the Duchess.
Oh, Lord. What have I said? My unlucky tongue. Come. Let's talk of something else. Valentine. I supped last night with Angelica. And her uncle, old Forsythe.
Yes?
Upon my soul, Angelica's a fine woman. And so is Mrs. Forsythe. And her sister, Mrs. Frail.
Yes, Mrs. Frail is a very fine woman. We all know her.
Oh, no, that is not fair.
What?
Oh, to tell?
To tell what? Why, what do you know of Mrs. Frail?
Who, I? Upon honor, I don't know whether she's romantic or not.
She says otherwise.
Oh, yes, yes, I can't deny it if she taxes me with it.
She'll be here by and by. She sees Valentine every morning.
How?
She does me the favor to...
Mrs. Frail wishes to know if you're stirring.
Show her up.
I'll be gone.
You can't. You'll meet her.
Is there a back way?
If there were, you would have more discretion than to give scandal such an advantage. Why, you're running away will prove all that he can tell of us.
Oh, unfortunate. She's come already.
Oh, good day to you, Val. A fine reputation I shall get by coming to see fellows in a morning. Scandal, you devil, are you here too?
Yes.
Oh, Mr. Tapper. Well, everything is safe with you, we know.
Oh, madam, you do me too much honor.
Well, I'll tell you news. Val, I suppose you hear your brother Benjamin is landed.
Aye, indeed.
And my brother Forsyth's daughter has come out of the country. I assure you, there's a match talked of by the old people. Well, if he be but as great a sea beast as she is a land monster, we shall have a most amphibious breed. the progeny will be all otters. He's been at sea and she's never been out of the country.
Oh, pox take him. Their conjunction bodes me no good, I'm sure.
Now you talk of conjunction. My brother Forsyth has cast both their horoscopes.
So?
'Tis the most superstitious old fool, and would not even have me come abroad. But nevertheless, Val, I stole out to see you. Well, and what will you give me now? Oh, come, come, I must have something.
Scandal shall give you a good name.
That's more than he has for himself.
No.
And what will you give me, Mr. Tackle?
My soul, madam.
Oh, sir. Here's the lawyer again from your father.
I'll come to him. Will you give me leave? I'll wait on you again presently.
No, I'll be gone. Come, who squires me to the exchange? I must call for my sister, Mrs. Forsyth, there.
I will. I have a mind to your sister.
I will, because I have a tongue for your ladyship.
Well, now, that's somewhat the better reason.
Well, if Tattle entertains you, I have the better opportunity to engage your sister. Adieu, Tattle and Mrs. Frail.
Adieu.
Adieu. Scandal. Please tell Angelica when you see her that I am about to make over my estate in order that I may avoid my debtors and be at liberty to see her.
I'll give her an account of you and your proceedings. But in my mind, you are a thoughtless adventurer.
You are but a dog, and I'll be but a fellow cur if I don't win the hand of fair Angelica.
Scene 2 opens. The setting is a room in Forsyth's house.
Good afternoon, Angelica.
It is a good afternoon for pleasure, Uncle. Pray lend me your coach. Mine's out of order.
You can stay at home, niece. All the women of my family are abroad. My wife, my sister, and my daughter.
Oh, but I have a mind to go abroad. And if you won't lend me your coach, I'll take a hackney or a chair. And leave you to cast the horoscope and find who's in conjunction with your wife.
Hmm?
Oh, Uncle, I'm afraid you are not Lord of the Ascendant.
Well, you are very pert, and always ridiculing that celestial science of astrology.
Don't be angry, but I'll swear you are a nuisance to the neighborhood.
You have your fortune in your hands, but I'll find a way to make your lover, your spendthrift gallant Valentine, pay for all.
Oh.
I will have patience, since it is the will of the stars I should thus be tormented. I will have my doors locked. I'll punish you. Not a man shall enter my house.
Do, Uncle. Lock him up quickly before my aunt comes home. Oh, but let me be gone first. And then let no mankind come near the house, but converse with spirits and the celestial signs.
Hey,
oh, but here comes Sir Samson. I'll be gone. I'll have no talk with him about Valentine.
I have the paper in my hand, Forsyth. Oh. I'll make the ungracious prodigal know who begat him. I warrant my son thought nothing belonged to a father but forgiveness and affection. Well, but here it is, under black and white. As soon as my son Benjamin has arrived, his brother Valentine is to make over to him his right of inheritance. Where's my daughter that's to be?
Oh, I wish things were done and the conveyance made. But your son Valentine must sign yet another document. Suppose he refuse. Oh, so you should have consulted the horoscope for the time. Well, but we'll make haste.
All should be done tonight.
Give me leave to contradict you and tell you you are ignorant.
Oh, I tell you I am wise. I've traveled. I know the signs and the planets and have seen a conjurer that couldn't keep the devil out of his wife's circle.
What do you know of my wife, Sir Sampson?
Oh, thy wife is a constellation of virtues. Oh. She's the moon, and thou art the man in the moon.
Sir,
here comes Jeremy. Sir. How now? Who sent you, and what would you have?
Mr. Valentine, my master. It is the first time he's been out since his confinement, and he comes to pay his duty to you.
Oh. Well, sir.
Here he is.
Your blessing, sir.
You've had it already, sir. I think I sent to you today in a bill of £4,000. That's a great deal of money, Brother Forsyth.
Nay, indeed, Sir Sampson, a great deal of money for a young man. I wonder what he can do with it.
Body of me, so do I. Now, hark ye, Valentine, if there's too much, now refund the superfluity. That's the here, boy.
'Twill scarce pay my debts. I hope you will be more indulgent than to oblige me to those hard conditions which my necessity signed to.
What were you pleased to intimate concerning indulgence,
Release me from some part.
Here's a rogue, Brother Forsyth. My own son makes a bargain underhand and seal in the morning and would be released from it in the afternoon. There's a rogue. This is the morality of your wits.
If you don't mean to provide for me, I desire you to leave me as you found me.
With all my heart. Haven't you £4,000? If I had it again, I wouldn't give thee a groat. Your brother will be in town tonight or tomorrow morning. And then, look you sign that other document. Come, Brother Forsyth, come on. Let's go.
I told you, sir, what your visit would come to.
I did not come to see him. I came to see Angelica. Oh, what's here? Oh, Mrs. Forsyth, Mrs. Frail.
Yes, sir.
I'll avoid them. Come this way. And Jeremy, go and inquire when Angelica will return.
Yes.
Yes, but my dear sister, I tell you, I have been watching you. What have you to do to watch me? Life, I'll do what I please.
You will?
Yes. A great piece of business to go to Covent Garden Square in a hackney coach and take a turn with one's friend.
The place is public. To be seen with a man alone in a hackney coach. Scandalous.
If I had gone to Knightsbridge or to Chelsea or to Spring Gardens with a man alone, well, then something might have been said.
Oh, you have been at a worse place.
I at a worse place? And with a man?
You were never at a tavern called The World's End.
No.
You deny it positively to my face.
I do deny it positively to your face, then.
Oh, look you here, sister. Where did you lose this gold buckle that I hold in my hand?
My buckle?
It's yours. Look at it.
Well, if you go to that, where did you find it?
Oh, I betrayed myself. Well, since you've discovered me, let us do what is done in duels and take care of one another.
With all my heart.
With all my heart.
And with an earnest of friendship and confidence, I'll acquaint you with a design that I have. You have a rich husband and are provided for.
True.
But I am at a loss and have no great stock, either of fortune or reputation, and therefore must look sharply about me. Now, Sir Sampson has a son, Benjamin, that is expected tonight. The estate, you know, is to be made over to him by Valentine. Now, if I could wheedle him,
you understand me?
I do.
Good. And will help you to the utmost of my power. And I can tell you one thing that falls out, luckily enough. My awkward daughter-in-law, who you know is designed to be Benjamin's wife, is grown fond of Mr. Tattle.
Of Tattle?
Now, if we can improve that and make her have an aversion for Benjamin, it may go a great way toward his liking you.
Yes!
Here she comes with Tattle.
Mother, look what Mr. Tattle has given me. A snuff box. He gave me this ring for a kiss.
Oh, fine, miss. You must not kiss and tell.
Oh, the girl is spoiled already. Do you think she'll ever endure a great, lovely sailor? Gad, I warrant you, she won't let him come near her after Mr. Tattle.
On my soul, I'm afraid not. A filthy creature that smells of pitch and tar.
Yes.
Oh, Tattle, the devil take you. Why did you ever see her before she was married?
Nay, why did we let him? Oh, my husband will hang us. He'll think we brought them acquainted.
Oh, come, Faith, let us be gone.
Remember, we wash our hands of it. We are innocent. Let us go.
What makes them go away, Mr. Tattle? What do they mean, do you know?
Yes, my dear, I think I can guess, but hang me if I know the reason for it.
Come, mustn't we go, too?
No, they don't mean that.
No? What then?
What shall you and I do together?
Will you let me make love to you?
Yes, if you please.
Frankie Garraby.
Well, and how much you make love to me? Come along to have you begin.
You must let me speak, miss. You must not speak first. I must ask you a question, and you must answer.
What, is it like the catechism?
Do you think you could love me?
Yes.
You must not say yes already.
What must I say then?
You must say no.
Why, must I tell a lie then?
All well-bred persons lie. Besides, you are a woman. You must never speak what you think. If I ask you to kiss me, you must be angry. But you must not refuse me.
Oh, I always had a great mind to tell lies. But they frightened me and said it was a sin.
Well, my pretty creature, will you make me happy by giving me a kiss?
No.
Oh, that's pretty well. But you should not have given it to me, but suffered me to have taken it.
Oh, well, we'll do it again.
Now, my little angel.
Oh, fine, now I can't abide you.
Admirable. Oh, that was as well as if you'd been born and bred in Covent Garden. And won't you show me, pretty miss, where your own room is? There I may love you without interruption.
No, indeed, won't I? But I'll run there and hide myself from you behind the curtain.
You shall not fly as fast as I pursue. Go, here comes Mrs. Frail.
For I have an opinion of your success, Valentine, for I believe that Angelica, like most women, will do anything to get a husband. And when she has one, she'll do anything to get rid of him.
You think the good lady would marry anyone who resembled a man?
Female frailty.
Here comes Angelica.
And with scandal for an escort. Oh, my dear Angelica, why were you so long? You were dressed before I came abroad.
I had to peruse a packet of letters. Valentine, did you take exceptions to me last night? For I believe I gave you some pain.
Does that please you?
Infinitely. I love to give pain.
You would affect a cruelty which is not in your nature. Your true vanity is in the power of pleasing.
Oh, but I ask your pardon for that. One's cruelty is one's power. And when one parts with one's cruelty, one parts with one's power. And when one has parted with that, I fancy one's old and ugly.
Suffer your cruelty to destroy your lover, and then how vain, how lost a thing you'll be.
Ooh, the vanity of these men. Mistress Frail, do you hear him?
Yes.
One gets lovers as fast as one pleases, and they live as long as one pleases, and they die as soon as one pleases.
Very pretty. Why, you make no more of changing lovers than changing partners at card games.
One no more owes one's beauty to a lover than one's wit to an echo.
Yet to those two vain, empty things, you owe the two greatest pleasures of your life.
How so?
To your lover, you owe the pleasure of hearing yourselves praised. And to an echo, the pleasure of hearing yourselves talk.
But I know a lady that talks, loves talking so incessantly, she won't give echo fair play. She has that everlasting rotation of tongue that an echo must wait till she dies before it can catch her last word.
Oh, fiction. Mistress Frail, let us leave these men.
Draw off Scandal.
Immediately. I have a word or two for you, Mr. Scandal. Let us be gone.
I would beg a little private audience, too. You had the tyranny to deny me last night.
Oh, but you saw I was engaged.
Unkind. You had the leisure to entertain a herd of fools.
What?
How can you find delight in such society?
I please myself.
You are merry, madam. But I would persuade you for a moment to be serious.
What? With that face? Oh, no. If you keep your countenance, 'tis impossible I should hold mine.
Oh, nay, please.
Well, after all, there is something very moving in a lovesick face.
What?
Oh, but I won't laugh. Don't be peevish.
Well,
Valentine, if ever you will win me, woo me now. Well, nay, if you're so tedious. There you will.
Can you not find in the variety of your inconstant disposition one moment?
You can't accuse me of inconstancy. I never told you that I loved you.
But I can accuse you of uncertainty for not telling me whether you did or not.
Ah, you mistake indifference for uncertainty. I never had concern enough to ask myself the question.
Ben come?
Oh, but enough. Here, empty.
Is Ben come? Has my son Ben come? Where is he? Now, Mrs. Frail, you shall see my son Ben. Body of me, he's the wholesome family. I haven't seen him for these 3 years. Call him in. I'm ready to cry for joy.
Now, Miss Prue, you shall see your husband.
Fish, he shall be none of my husband.
But see, Valentine starts to go.
We are the twin stars and cannot shine in one sphere. When he rises, I must say.
Ooh. What? Is my son Valentine going? What, would he sneak off and not see his brother? Madam, Have no more to say to him. He's an undone scoundrel and court your estate.
Well,
he doesn't care a doit for your person.
Ah, but I'm pretty even with him, Sir Sampson. For if ever I could have liked anything in him, it should have been his estate, too.
Well spoken. You're now a wiser woman than I thought you were.
Ah, if I marry Sir Sampson, I'm for a good estate. But if I were obliged to make a choice, I declare I'd rather have you than your son.
During this first intermission, the patrons of the theater have left their seats and are visiting with friends. Two men of fashion are standing close to a stage box talking.
Where are your seats?
Oh, in the side box.
Oh, why do you sit there?
Oh, to ogle the ladies.
To what purpose?
To no purpose.
Why then do you do it?
Because they like it and I like it.
Ah, yes, yes. You haven't missed a show this season, I wager.
Oh, not a one, no. I never fail to go behind the scenes of the playhouses with all my friends. Not, you may imagine, to be diverted with a play, but to intrigue and show myself. I stand upon the stage, talk loudly, and stare about, which confounds the actors and disturbs the audience. Upon which the galleries, who hate the appearance of one of us, begin to hiss and cry, off, off! And they attack us with volleys of sucked oranges and half-eaten apples.
And you retire.
Oh, yes, without doubt, if I'm sober. For orange will stain silk, and an apple may disfigure a feature.
Latecomers of fashion are still entering the theater.
Macaroons, oranges.
There's the signal for the play to begin. The crowd is rapidly being seated. Act Two opens. The setting is a room in Forsyth's house as before. Sir Sampson greets his sailor son, Ben, who has been away from home 3 years.
Oh, my son, Ben, bless thee, my dear boy, thou art welcome.
Thank you, Father, and I'm glad to see you.
Odds, bud, and I'm glad to see thee. Kiss me, my boy. Kiss me again and again, dear Ben.
So, enough, Father. Mess, I'd rather kiss these gentlewomen.
And so thou shalt, Miss Angelica, my son, Ben.
Forsooth, if you please. I salute you.
Mrs. Frail, my son, Ben.
Oh, he's kissing Mistress Frail, and at the first meeting.
Miss Prue, my son, Ben.
Welcome, sir.
I salute you, Miss Prue.
You're welcome ashore.
Thank you, kind friend Tattle.
No, thou hast been many a weary league, Ben, since I saw thee.
Been far enough, and that be all. Well, Father, and how do all at home? How does Brother Dick and Brother Valentine?
Oh, Dick has been dead these 2 years. I writ you word when you were at Leghorn.
I had forgot Dick's dead, as you say. Well, you've been married again, Father, be you?
Oh, no, my boy. I intend you shall marry Ben. I wouldn't marry for thy sake.
What does that signify? Huh? You marry again, I'll go to sea. Pray, don't let me be your hindrance. As for my part, mayhap, I have no mind to marry.
That would be a pity. Such a handsome young gentleman.
Handsome, Mrs. Frail? Nay, forsooth, and you be for joking. A man that is married is like a galley slave. He is chained to an oar all his life, and mayhap forced to tug a leaky vessel into the bar.
Oh, Ben's a very wag. Oh, only a little rappy. He wants a little polishing.
Polishing? I like his humor mightily. It's plain and honest. I should like such a humor in a husband extremely.
And I should like such a handsome woman.
I swear, Mr. Benjamin is the veriest wag in nature,
yes.
An absolute seawit. But methinks, Sir Sampson, you should leave him alone with Miss Prue. Mr. Tattle, we must not hinder lovers. Come, Tattle, we must
wait. Oh, body of me, madam, you say true. Mrs. Frail, we'll leave them to their own destiny.
That we will. Let's go off and leave them.
Come, mistress. I'll sit by you.
You need not sit so near one. If you have anything to say, I can hear you farther off. I ain't deaf.
Nor I ain't dumb. I can be heard as far as another. I'll heave off to please you. Look you, forsooth. I am, as it were, bound for the land of matrimony. 'Tis a voyage, do you see, that was none of my seeking. I was commanded by a father. The short of the thing is that if you like me and I like you, we may chance to ride the high seas together.
I don't know what to say to you.
No? Why are you so scornful?
I don't like you nor love you at all, nor never will, that's more, so don't trouble me no more, you ugly thing.
You heard t'other handsome young woman speak civilly to me of her own accord. I don't think you are any more to compare to her than a can of small beer to a bowl of punch.
Well, and there's a fine gentleman that was here that loved me and I love him. And if he sees you speak to me any more, he'll thresh your jacket for you, that he will, you great sea calf.
Marry thee? Oons, I'll marry a Lapland witch as soon.
I won't be called names, you stinking tar barrel.
Tar barrel? Let your sweetheart call me so and I'll thrash him.
Here come Mrs. Forsythe, Mrs.
Let's see what's the matter, Mr. Benjamin. What have you done to her?
Let her cry, Mrs. Forsythe. She has been gathering foul weather in her mouth, and now it rains out at her eyes.
Come, miss. Come along with me and tell me, poor child.
Lord, what shall we do? There's my brother Forsythe and Sir Samson coming. Sister, do you take Miss Prue down to her chamber, for they must not know that they have fallen out.
Come,
yes. Get along. Come, Mr. Benjamin. Will you venture yourself with me?
Venture? Mess, and that I will, though 'twere to sea in a storm.
Forsythe, I left them together here.
What? Are they gone?
He'll make love to her straight off.
Sir Samson, we'll have the wedding tomorrow morning.
Yes, with all my heart.
At 10 o'clock, punctually at 10.
Sir Samson?
Yes?
Sad news.
Who blesses, sir? Scandal.
What's the matter?
Can't you guess what ought to afflict you and him and all of us more than anything else?
Body of me, I don't know any universal grievance but a new tax.
Something has appeared to your son Valentine. He's gone to bed and very ill. He desires he may see you in the morning, but would not be disturbed tonight.
Yes, I warrant the devil will tell him in a dream that he mustn't part with his estate. But I'll bring him a parson to tell him the devil's a liar. And if that won't do, I'll bring him a lawyer to outlie the devil. Adieu, gentlemen, adieu, adieu.
Alas, Mr. Forsythe, I'm afraid all is not right.
Hmm?
He thinks he does not look as he used to do. No, Mr. Forsythe, nor you neither.
How? Me?
Do you sleep well o' nights?
It is very well.
Are you certain? You do not look so... No, nor Valentine neither.
I am in health, I think.
So was Valentine this morning, and looked just so.
Indeed. Bless me, I...
Husband?
Oh, here's Mrs. Forsythe.
Husband, will you go to bed? It's 10 o'clock. Mr. Kendall, your servant.
Fox and her. She has interrupted my design, but I must work her into the project. You keep early hours, madam.
Mr. Forsythe is punctual. We sit up after him.
My dear, pray lend me your looking glass.
Pray lend it him, madam.
There you are, darling.
I'll tell you the reason, Mrs. Forsythe. My passion for you has grown so vile.
Oh, was it ever such impudence? You have loved him before my husband.
Oh, my heart.
I swear I'll tell him.
Do, I'll die a martyr. Rather, I'll tell you what project I had to get him out of the way. I suggested he was ill.
Oh, my face is drawn. I know.
Observe your husband looking in the glass.
Unless this glass lies, I am pale. I do not like that sudden flushing. It is gone already. Now I'm faint again. Now I'm pale again. Just as my breath grows short.
Intake. Pursue it in the name of love and pleasure.
Oh, what ails you, Mr. Forsythe?
It is not so well as I thought I was. Lend me your hand, my dear.
Your lady says your sleep has been on quiet of late.
I will go to bed.
Do so, Mr. Forsythe, and say your prayers.
I will do so, Mr. Scandal.
I hope this will be gone by morning. You had best take a little dark coating and cowslip water, and lie upon your back, and maybe you may dream.
Thank you, Mr. Scandal. I will. Good night.
Good night. Good night, Mr.
Night,
Forsythe.
Darling.
And I hope Mars and Venus will be in conjunction while your wife and I are together.
Oh, fie. I'll swear you're impudent.
I'll swear you're handsome.
Pish. You'd tell me so, though you did not think me so.
And you'd think so, though I should not tell you so.
Oh, Lord, who's here? Oh, Mrs. Frail and Ben, we must away. Scandal,
go to bed and dream.
Dreaming is the poorest retreat of a lazy, hopeless dower.
Mrs. Frail, I love to speak my mind. Father has nothing to do with me.
Aye, but my dear, we must keep it secret until the estate be settled. For you know, marrying without an estate is like sailing a ship without ballast.
That's true.
If you should forsake me after all, you'd break my heart.
You don't think I'm false-hearted like a landman.
And will you love me always, sailor man?
Once I love, I'll stick like pitch.
Oh, you are the happiest, merriest man alive!
The second scene of the second act takes place in Valentine's house. Scandal and Jeremy discuss the feigned madness of Valentine.
Well, is your master ready?
Yes, sir.
Does he look madly and talk madly?
Oh, yes, sir.
Would he have Angelica acquainted with the reason of his design?
Oh, no, sir. He has a mind to try whether his playing the madman won't make her play the fool and fall in love with him.
Upon my word, here she comes.
Scandal, pray tell me, what is the matter?
Madam, my master's mad.
How do you mean, mad?
Why, faith, madam, he's mad for want of his wits.
Oh, no.
Just as he was poor for want of money. His head is e'en as light as his pockets.
Oh, my poor Valentine.
Pray, madam, be not too concerned.
Oh, Mr. Scandal, you cannot think me guilty of so much inhumanity as not to be concerned for a man I must do myself obliged to. Pray, tell me the truth.
I wish telling a lie would mend the matter, but this is no new effect of an unsuccessful passion.
But I know not what to think. I should be vexed to have a trick put upon me. Mr. Scandal, may I not see him?
Well, I'm afraid the physician is not willing you should see him yet. Jeremy, go in and inquire.
Oh, yes, sir.
I saw him wink and smile. I fancy it is a trick. But I fear my happiness depends upon the recovery of Valentine. I cannot speak, but you may tell me, for you know what I would ask.
So this is pretty plain. Be not too much concerned. An acknowledgement of love from you, perhaps, may work a cure.
Oh, say you so? Nay, then I'm convinced. And if I don't play trick for trick, may I never taste the pleasure of revenge. Oh, but good nature and humanity oblige me to be concerned for him. But to love is neither in my power nor inclination.
But won't you see him, then, if it is ours?
Oh, what signify a madman's desires? Besides, it would make me uneasy. If he loves me, he cannot help it. And if I don't love him, I can't help it. No more than he can help his being a man, or I my being a woman. Or no more than I can help my want of inclination to stay longer here. Adieu.
An admirable composition, faith, this same womankind.
What is she gone so? My master longs to see her and is almost mad in good earnest with the joyful news of her being here.
Ask no questions, for I can't resolve you. But I'll inform you, master. In the meantime, if our project succeed no better with his father than it does with his mistress, he may descend from his exhortation of madness into the road of common sense. Here, Sir Sampson, you know your cue. I'll do your
honor. Yes, sir.
You see, Mr. Backham, here's the paper signed with his own hand.
Oh, good, sir. And the conveyance is ready drawn. If he be ready to sign and seal.
He shan't, sickness shan't excuse him. Sirrah,
yes,
where's
sir.
Your master?
Oh, sir, he's quite gone.
Gone? But he's not dead?
Oh, no, sir, not dead.
Well, what's the matter with him?
He's stark mad, sir.
A what? Is he non-compass?
Quite non-compass, sir.
Mad? Oh. I'll make him find his senses.
Mr. Scandal is with him. I'll open the door and... I am true.
How now? Oh, for the life of me, look.
Oh.
Valentine, my son.
Oh, he's demented.
Poised on a pedestal, wearing a draped white robe, a laurel wreath on his head, and harp in hand.
I am
Demented! Demented!
Ah, my friends, non-comp.
Hush, hush. My son, Valentine, moves.
He's going to speak.
I am Turud.
How now? What's to do?
What's that?
For heaven's sake, softly, sir, and gently. Don't provoke him.
Answer me. What is that?
And that.
Oh, does he not know me? Valentine, look, I am thy father, and this is honest brief Backram, the lawyer.
Ah, yes, sir.
It may be so. I did not know you. Oh. There are people that we do know, and people that we do not know, and yet the sun shines on all alike. It is strange, but I am truth, and I have come to give the world the lie.
Oh, body of me, I don't know what to say to him.
Why does the lawyer wear black? Dost thou know me?
Oh, Lord, what must I say? Yes, sir.
Thou liest. I am truth. And I have very few acquaintances.
Oh, Sir Sampson, I can do you no service while he's in this condition. Oh, here's your paper, sir. He may do me a mischief if I stay. And don't you go yet.
Send for him if there be occasion. For I fancy his presence provokes him more.
Oh, my father here.
Oh, he recovers.
Oh, your blessing, sir.
Oh, bless thee, Valentine. How dost thou do, boy?
Oh, pretty well.
Oh.
I've been a little out of order.
No.
Oh, won't you please to sit, sir? Yes. I'll get down off the pedestal.
Yes, my boy, yes. Now come, thou shalt sit down by me.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Yes. Now let me feel thy hand again, Val.
Oh.
Why, it doesn't shake.
Hmm?
Thou can't write thy name, Val.
Hmm?
Jeremy, overtake Mr. Buckram. Bid him make haste back with the conveyance. Quick, quick. Dost thou know this paper, Val? I know thou art honest and will perform the articles.
Pray, let me see it, sir.
There.
You hold it so far I cannot tell whether I know it or no.
I'll put it in my pocket, Val, and then nobody need hold it. There. Now, Val, now there, it's safe enough, boy. But thou shalt have it as soon as thou hast set thy hand to another paper, little Val.
Ah, here is the lawyer with the itching palm, and he has come to be scratched. But my nails are not long enough. Let me have a pair of red-hot tongs.
Oh, Lord, let me be gone. I'm not venturing myself for the man.
You need not run so fast. Honesty will not overtake you.
Oh, I know not what to say or do.
What's that? It's out of his way? I am truth. Yes. I can set him right.
Oh, Val, my boy, this is awful.
Come with me, Jeremy. Yes. Make haste. Get a Forsythe, Mrs. Forsythe, and Mrs.
What did he prophesy? Sir Sampson, oh, bless us. How are we?
How are we? Why, we are fools as we used to be. That you could not foresee that the moon would predominate and my son be mad. I am going. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Is he gone and in contempt of science?
You must excuse his passion, Mr. Forsythe. His son is non compos mentis, and thereby incapable of making any conveyance in law. So that all his schemes are useless.
Say you so?
But, Mr. Forsythe, would you not talk with Valentine? Perhaps you may understand him. I'm apt to believe there is something mysterious in his discourses, and sometimes rather think him inspired than mad.
You speak with singular good judgment, Mr. Scandal, truly.
Yes.
Let us go into him.
So, has my sea lover lost his anchor of hope, then? Will Brother Ben have no estate?
But what will you do, sister?
Do? I'll send him back to sea again in the first foul weather.
Forsooth.
Here's Ben now. Leave me alone with him, sister.
Mess, I have had such a hurricane upon your account yonder.
My account? Pray, what's the matter?
Why, father came and found me squabbling with yon chitty-faced Miss Prue, as he would have me marry.
Oh, impiety, impiety. How I've been mistaken. What an inhuman, merciless creature have I set my heart upon.
Lord, she's mad.
I am not mad, monster. I am wise enough to find you out.
More shame for you.
The wind's changed.
What did you mean all the while, to make a fool of me?
Any fool but a husband.
Husband? Gad, I would not be your husband if you would have me. Now I know your mind.
Why canst thou love, Porpoise?
He that marries you will go to sea in a henpecked frigate. So ship ahoy. I'm weighing anchor.
Nay.
Mercy on us.
Hush,
Forsythe. Interrupt me not. I whisper a prediction to thee, and thou shalt prophesy. I am truth. Aye, ask me questions. concerning tomorrow.
Ask him, Mr. Forsythe.
Pray, what will be done at court? Scandal will tell you. I am truth, and I never come there.
Miss Angelica and Mr. Tatlow.
Hey, Mr. Tatlow, if you make love to me, you spoil my design, for I intend to make you my confidant.
Oh, but, madam, to throw away your person, such a person, and such a fortune, on a madman...
I never loved him until he was mad. But don't tell anybody so.
How's this? Tatlow making love to Angelica.
I have much ado to tell you, ladyship, how long I've been in love with you. Oh, madam, look upon us both.
I am Truth. Truth, I am.
There, you see the ruins of Valentine, a poor, decayed creature. And here, a complete and lively figure.
It is enough.
Who's here? You know me, Valentine?
No, I hope not.
I am Jack Tattle, your friend.
My friend?
Do you know me, Valentine?
Huh? Oh, very well.
Who am I?
You are a woman, one to whom heaven gave beauty.
Mr. Forsythe, we had best leave him. He may grow outrageous.
You will be directed by you.
Angelica, you need not be afraid. My mind has worn this mask of madness only as a slave of love.
Poor Valentine.
Oh, let us leave off acting and be ourselves. And since you have loved me, you should confess it.
I would I had loved you. For heaven knows, I pity you. And could I have foreseen the bad effects, I would have striven. Ah, oh, but that's too late.
My seeming madness has deceived my father and procured me time to think of means to reconcile me to him.
How? I thought your love of me had caused this transport in your soul, which it seems you only counterfeited for mercenary ends.
Nay, now you do me wrong. For if any interest was considered, it was yours.
Then you thought me mercenary.
Oh, tis barbarous to misunderstand me longer.
Madam.
Ah, but here's Jeremy. Acknowledge your trick, Jeremy, and confess your master's madness counterfeit.
I'll maintain him to be absolutely and substantially mad. Sarah, you lie.
You see, he denies it.
Did you ever know any madman mad enough to own it?
Sot, can't you understand?
Is he mad or no, Jeremy?
Who's there?
Well, go and see.
Oh, yes, sir. Love,
I'm very glad I can move your mirth, though not your compassion.
Oh, sir, your father has sent to know if you're any better yet. Will it please you to be mad, sir, or how?
Oh, stupidity! I'm mad and will be mad to everybody. But this lady...
Well, I'll tell you two things before I leave you. I am not the fool you take me for, and you are mad and don't know it. Good day.
She is harder to be understood than a piece of Irish manuscript. But I will pursue her and know her, if it be possible, in spite of the opinion of my satirical friend Scandal, who says... that women are like tricks by sleight of hand, which to admire we should not understand.
Third act setting is a room in Forsythe's house. Sir Samson and Angelica are conversing.
Oh, Miss Angelica, I've not been honored with the commands of a fair lady in a great while. Odds, madam, you've revived me. Not since I was 35 have I...
Oh, you're an absolute courtier, Sir Samson.
Oh, come, I'm not so old. Don't despise 50.
Not at all. A very fashionable age.
Oh, quite.
But Sir Samson... I'm weary of living single, and I want a husband.
Oh, madam, you deserve a good husband, and 'twere pity you should be thrown away upon any of these idle rogues about the town.
Oh,
madam, allow me to offer myself for a husband. I would be
Hold, Sir Samson. I asked your advice for a husband, and you're offering me a husband. But you know, I was indeed thinking to propose something like it in jest to satisfy you about Valentine. Now, If a match were seemingly carried on between you and me, it would oblige him to throw off his disguise.
Oh, but why must the match only be seemingly carried on? Let it be a real contract.
Oh, fine.
Gods, madam, I love you as long as I live and leave you as good jointure when I die.
Ah, but that is not in your power, Sir Samson. For when Valentine confesses himself in his senses, he must make over his inheritance to his younger brother Benjamin.
Will you consent? Is it a match, then?
Let me consult my lawyer concerning this obligation, and I'll give you my answer.
Oh, with all my heart. Come, come, let's go. Come away, madam. Come.
Oh, Mrs. Tattle, I've been looking up and down for you till I'm as tired as anything in the world.
Oh, Parks, how shall I get rid of this foolish girl?
Oh, I have pure news, I can tell you, pure news. I must not marry the seaman now. My father says so. And I know you may be my husband now, if you please.
Oh, fine, miss. Who told you so, child?
Why, my father. I told him that you loved me.
And who told you so, child?
Who? Why, you did not you?
Oh, that was yesterday, miss. I've been asleep since then, slept a whole night, and did not so much as dream of the matter.
Oh, but I dreamt that it was so, though.
Oh, fine, miss.
Don't you love me as well as you did last night?
Oh, child, you would not have me.
Oh, yes, but I would, though.
So I tell you, you would not. You forget. You are a woman. And you don't know your own mind. Excuse me, miss. Here comes your father.
Mercy on us. What do these lunacies portend? Alas, he's mad, child. Stark wild.
I will have a man some way or other.
You shall have a whip.
I'll marry the butler. He says he loves me.
Did he so? You go to your room and don't you dare leave it.
Oh, Forsythe, old Forsythe, wish me joy, double joy, both as uncle and astrologer. You're an old fellow, Forsythe, and yet you shall live to dance at my wedding, faith and troth you shall.
Where's Valentine? I'll fetch him.
Well, this is so surprising. Oh,
what does my aunt say? Surprising aunt? Not at all.
I'm glad to hear you have so much romance in you, Sir Samson.
Yes, where is my father?
Why, who's here? The madman with scandal.
Sir, I come to acknowledge my errors and ask your pardon.
What, have you found your senses at last, then?
I never was distracted.
What?
It was all counterfeit, Sir Samson.
I thought I had reasons, Father, but it was a poor contrivance.
Contrivance? To cheat your father? Sirrah, could you hope to prosper?
Indeed, I thought, sir, when the father endeavored to undo the son, it was a reasonable return to nature.
Very good, sir. Come, Buckram, the paper. Come, Valentine, will you sign and seal?
If you please, sir. But first, I would ask this lady one question.
This lady? No, sir. You shall ask that lady no questions till you've asked her blessing, sir. That lady is to be my wife.
I have heard as much, sir. But I would have it from her own mouth.
It's true.
Where's your plot now, sir, and your contrivance? Come, will you sign and seal?
With all my heart, sir. I never valued fortune, but as it was subject to my pleasure, and my only pleasure was to please this lady, for that reason, I will sign. Give me the paper.
Here is the deed, sir.
But where is the bond by which I am obliged to sign this?
Oh, Sir Samson, you have it.
No, I have it. And I'll use it as I would everything that is an enemy to Valentine.
Well,
Sir Samson, since I played you a trick, I'll advise you how you may avoid such another. Learn to be a good father, or you'll never get a second wife.
You're a crocodile.
Oh, really, Sir Samson? This is a sudden eclipse.
You're an illiterate old fool. Yes, and I'm another. Farewell.
Come, Mrs. Forsythe. Let's dispatch the wedding dinner.
Yes?
Angelica, shall I kiss your hand upon the contract? Oh, here comes Mrs. Frail to be a witness to the sealing of the deed.
Ah, Mistress Frail, what shall I do? Shall I have Valentine? I think I must have him. I take him. Well, then, Valentine, I think I can endure you.
Fie, girl. Tell him so in plain terms, for I'm sure you have a mind to him.
I think I have.
What?
And the horrid man looks as if he thought so, too.
I do.
Well, you ridiculous thing, you. I'll have you.
Angelica.
Oh, but I won't be kissed.
What?
No, nor I won't be thanked. What? Here, kiss my hand, though.
Ah.
So now hold your tongue. Don't say a word.
The music is ready that Sir Samson provided for his own wedding. Valentine, let's have a dance.
Anything, my dear friend Scandal. Anything that looks like joy and transport.
I've done dissembling now, Valentine. But if that coldness which I've always worn before you should run to an extreme fondness, You must not suspect it.
If ever you seem to love too much, it must only be when I can't love enough.
Ah, have a care of promises. You know you're apt to run more into debt than you're able to pay.
Well, madam, you have done exemplary justice in punishing an inhuman father and rewarding a faithful lover. But there is a third good work which I in particular must thank you for. I was an infidel to your unjust sex, and you have converted me.
Men are generally hypocrites and infidels. They pretend to worship, but have neither zeal nor faith. Ah, how few, like Valentine, would persevere even to martyrdom. The miracle today is that we find a lover true, not that a woman kind.
You have just heard a performance of Love for Love under the direction of Charles Warburton. The radio adaptation was made by Blevins Davis. The cast of characters was as follows: Sir Samson Legend, Louis Hector; Valentine, Burford Hamden; Scandal, John Moore; Tattle, Earl Larrymore; Ben, John Kane; Forsyte, William Podmore; Buckram, William Shelley; Jeremy, John McGovern; Angelica, Mary Michaels; Mrs. Forsyte, Elaine Dumas; Mrs. Frail, Beatrice Pons; Miss Prue, Phyllis Langner; Courtier, Kenneth Treseda; and the orchestra was directed by Joseph Honte. Next week at this same hour, you will hear another one of the great plays, The School for Scandal. Jack Costello speaking. This has been an NBC educational feature of the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City.